Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time. I'm, of course, David Goss. Alongside me, Stefano Fusaro, Matt Doyle. This is the A-Team. I'm going to do a whole bit about the A-Team. We'll do about 10 minutes on the A-Team. It's a good group. It feels cozy, just the three of us.
Would you call us partners in soccer?
See, I'm more of like a commune vibe. Like, I don't need like official names on a wall. Like, we all just work together. Sometimes you do it, sometimes I do it. And then, like, it's just a flow.
I'll say this. You already have a leg up on Weeby because you actually pronounced my name right. Ooh. So there you go.
There we go.
Sorry,
Weeby. So that's two things. One, Weeby sucks. Two, you know the next one's going to be wrong. Like, I'm going to say it wrong now.
100%.
Coming up in 10 seconds. In fairness, I have a name people mispronounce. Do people ever, have you ever been in a broadcast setting where someone said it wrong, you corrected them off air, and they actively were like, let's just leave you as this? Did Weeby do that?
I won't throw him that far under the bus, even though I probably should.
He's an 18-wheeler, baby.
But no, yeah, well, I have corrected him, and then he forgets again.
It's
not like he does it on purpose. But look, man, my name's not a normal one for this side of the Atlantic Ocean, I guess, and it's kind of a little tougher to get to, so I don't really correct that many people. You say my name one way or the other.
Accent on the first syllable because he's of Italian heritage, even though he's Argentinian American.
Yeah, it's too much.
And
to
usually
explain.
In Spanish, the accent would be on the second syllable,
which would be on the A, exactly.
Does Chiellini get it right when he says your name?
Chiellini, I would hope so, right? I would hope he would.
I hope
that, right?
He does it. And then you call him a clown, and then we go from start there. Yeah, we've got a big show today. Midweek MLS action. So a loaded Wednesday that we're going to react to, talk about, and then a massive weekend coming up. A ton of rivalry games, which we say all the time, but this time it's true. There are actual big time rivalry games.
Someone's going to let Sporting Kansas City know this time because they didn't show up for their first rivalry.
They are hosting St. Louis for the first time, so that's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to look forward to that. Cascadia Cup match, Rocky Mountain Cup, Philly Red Bulls. I think there's one more in there that I'm missing. And then, of course, Inter Miami.
So should we call Philly Red Bulls the Central Jersey rivalry? Because apparently Central Jersey is now officially recognized as a part of... Tom should be on the show for this. Yes, we needed him. Tom is pro Central Jersey.
I don't think he cares. I think Tom
cares about everything.
But I think
Tom's superpower. He somehow cares about everything.
But I think his hate is that he doesn't care about Central Jersey because that's not where he's from.
No, he is from Central Jersey.
I thought he's from the coast.
Yeah.
It is Central Jersey. It is. I mean, it is Central Jersey just on the coast side, but it is.
Oh,
Central,
I thought,
right?
They just called that the shore. That's Jersey Shore.
It's a subgenre
inside of Central Jersey.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to guess that we're going to get a lot of angry texts from Tom. So we'll know by the time this show comes out and then is played.
We're just pissing everyone off. Tom, Doyle, I mean, it's not Doyle. Doyle's here.
Weeby.
I mean, it's just
Weeby doesn't count.
We're getting a lot of us. So
should we trash Kalen too? While he's
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah. Let's hit that one too. We did get a tweet from someone asking for a former player's view on something, and they tagged at Kalen Carr to be the one to give that.
The one thing Kalen lives for is interaction on social media. So you know, sit on the edge of your seat waiting for a reply to that.
Might be a while.
Yeah.
You'll probably get it by the time he gets to New England for his next New England match. So we've got a ton to talk about. We've got national team stuff to hit as well. We'll preview the weekend. So it's going to be a fun show. First, let's talk about these beautiful scarves we've got up here. This is the 10th annual Kick Childhood Cancer Campaign with MLS and Continental Tire, partnering to raise awareness and funds for pediatric cancer research and treatment. You will see my two models. If you are not watching, you can watch this show. If you are not watching and you're not going to watch this show, you will see a jersey that you're not looking at right now that is on Stefano, played in this month in MLS, or the scarves that Doyle is sporting. Oh, these are pre-match tops. Sorry about that.
Pre-match.
And there will be gold netting in the goals to celebrate this. So you'll see all of that throughout the month. Captain Armbands as well. The campaign started last night. It runs through the end of September. MLS and Continental Tire will donate more than $100,000 to Children's Oncology Group. So a special cause, a special moment. I think this is the 10th anniversary of this happening. Every year we get dope tops, great scarves. You can also donate money as well. They recommend $10 for the 10-year anniversary, but whatever you choose to do is your own option. And let's dig into the Wednesday night games that we saw kick off Kick Childhood Cancer. Let's start with the best things you saw for what was Match Day 29. Matt Doyle, we begin with you.
Lucho Acosta, MVP performance. Since he weren't great, especially in the first half down in Atlanta, they were down 1-0. And they played better in the second half. They weren't entirely great in the second half, but they were definitely a lot better. They were missing Aaron Bupenza. Junior Moreno was out as well. So they're down a couple starters.
No, Moreno played.
Moreno played.
He had the assist on the goal.
That's right. He came in at halftime as well. Yeah. That's right.
Heads it down to Lucho.
right.
Classic center forward, Junior Moreno.
Yeah, of course. He's ending up in the box a lot lately. And this was a, hey, we have the best player on the field win. This was the type of win that you get because you have the league MVP and Lionel Messi is the best player in MLS. Lucho Acosta is the MVP this year. To be this good on a team that is now starting to run away with the shield, they deserve all the credit in the world. This group this year, especially, but what they did last year as well, pulling out of that 3-year death spiral to start Cincinnati's time in MLS. It was nice to see it. And as I was watching it, actually, I was talking to my good friend, our former colleague, Bobby Warshaw, talking about Cincinnati, and we're trying to figure out, like, what makes them so good? And, they have a very good goalkeeper. They have good defenders and really good talent at about, I would say, maybe 9 of 11 starting spots. They are like well above the typical talent threshold, and then they could bring guys in off the bench. But then you add on the MVP on top of it. It's a really good team. They're going to win a trophy. They deserve it. That was the best thing I saw last night. Let's put it in perspective, though, because I mentioned the 3-year death spiral they were in.
And that they clinched their playoff spot last night.
That's true. I forgot about that.
That was the key to everything, which was they came from behind, they won 2-1. That clinched their spot in the 2023 postseason. They are the first team to do it. They do it in August. Right. This is a franchise that won 3 straight wooden spoons to start their ever time. And now put it in perspective.
Yeah, 2019, 20, and 21, they won 3 straight wooden spoons. Technically, it wasn't awarded in 2020 because that was the COVID shortened year. But come on.
Everyone just felt bad for everybody at the time. We were all in a bad spot.
The club, over those 3 years, their goal differential, really it's 2.5 years because, again, 2020 was COVID shortened. Their goal differential was minus 105.
Wow.
Minus 105 over 3 years before Pat Noonan, head coach, and Chris Albright, the GM, came in. For context, it took Chivas USA, which everybody knows as the worst team in MLS history, it took Chivas USA a decade to get to minus 100 goal differential since he did it in 3 years.
That's impressive.
Yeah. I mean,
it's almost,
if you're going to break records, shatter
go
them.
All the way.
Cincy, by the way, and not Chivas, are still the worst team in MLS history in terms of points per game. They need a 6-point week. If they have a 6-point week, this will be the week they climb over that all-time record from Chivas USA. So it could still be an even bigger week for this team. Shout out, by the way, to MLS Ref Stats on Twitter for the data here. The Chivas line is 1.109 points per game over their existence as an MLS team. Since entering this season, we're 0.872 points per game. Entering last season, they were 0.659 points per game. Nice. This was an impossibly deep hole that they had to dig out of. They were over the, like, I have never seen an MLS team be so consistently bad over the course of 3 years. Like, I watched the old Metro Stars team. That 99 team took years, maybe decades off my life. Since he got 3 straight years of that, and they turned it around immediately last year under Pat Noonan and Chris Albright, getting into the playoffs. And now they're taking a big step forward this year, winning the Supporters Shield. Let's just say it, like they are going to win the Supporters Shield, and they might set a single season points record while they're doing it. Those guys deserve statues. Like, Cincy fans have to shower them with praise and affection for what they have managed to accomplish in a very short time frame.
So, just to put the years in with what Doyle just mentioned, 2019, 20, and 21, the first 3 years in Major League Soccer for Cincinnati, Chris Albright took over at the end of the 2021 season. So 2022, they finished fifth in the East. They won a playoff game at the New York Red Bulls. They actually challenged Philly as well. And now this year, Supporters Shield leaders, Open Cup semifinal. Like, how do you sort of think about how bad it was into how good it has gotten?
Improbable. I mean, for a team to, you know, I think maybe in Major League Soccer, you can have that type of turnaround, maybe not to that level. But I think it's when you're talking about one of the worst teams in the league where it was really no hope, you know, and I hate to say that for Cincinnati fans, but now they're really to turn it around this much to the point where they might set a record for points, where they're going to win their first trophy unless something insane happens. It really is a testament to just what they were able to do as far as roster building. Just to go back to piggyback off of Lucho, I mean, bringing Lucho in, just that might have just been that move to really just put them over the top, to get them to be able to produce and get the most out of all of the other players around them. I think that was huge.
What fascinates me about this, so in two ways. One is the amount of work they've done to bring players in, and then the amount of players that are actually still on the team from the bad years.
Right.
I was talking to someone the other day.
For the Nick Hagelin.
Someone was like, oh, Nick Hagelin still plays for this team. That's a train wreck. And you're like, no, he's actually been really good for them. Yeah. Obviously, Brandon Vasquez was already on the roster. Alvaro Barrial was a DP signing they turned into a left wing back.
They also, I mean, they lose a guy like Brenner, and they're able to just continue on.
They made Brenner work.
Right.
Credit to Pat Noonan.
He was a bust in 2021. Yeah, yep. He was one of the worst forwards in the league in 2021. 2022, they build him up to the point where he's an eight-figure sale to a Serie A.
He might start for Udinese. They've sold their striker. Right. And that's... So I think there's credit there, which is it was not an excuse to come in and say, the team is bad, so we have no pressure on us. We're just going to wait till we can flip the roster, and then we'll start being good in 3 years. Which Chris Albright could have said... I think ownership would have signed off on, and fans and us probably would have accepted of like, yeah, it's going to take a while. So they didn't do that. And then while being competitive, they brought in Nabuoto. Yep. They brought in now Bupenza. They brought in Mascara. They brought in Miazga. Yeah, they drafted Celentano and signed Alec Khan. They've made Junior Moreno. They've made a lot of moves on the fly now that have become what you said, which is they are competitively, they have a player at top five at their position in nine positions, you could argue. They have depth that other teams don't have that allows them to continue to compete. It's impressive.
And they also, beyond that, they also, I think, simplified and put the right pieces around Lucho.
Mm-hmm. Which wasn't a given that Lucho was ever going to be this guy.
Yeah, and playing the 3-5-2 instead of being, you know, kind of a square peg round hole 4-2-3-1 team, like, or 4-3-3 team. I still think the 4-3-3 is the best formation if you can play at the highest level, if you have the right pieces, but not every team is going to find two dynamic wingers who can be playmakers and goal dangerous and track back and press well. Like, it's really tough to find those types of players unless you have Chelsea's budget, you know, like the best teams in the world are the teams that by definition get those players. I think putting Lucho in a situation where he's playing behind two forwards, so like he's never going to be isolated, and because he's so good, they're never going to be isolated. And by the way, they've done a good job of getting a lot of defensive work out of those two forwards as well. And then you're playing with wingbacks, so you're always going to have width. And like, yeah, it's not going to be the most dynamic width in the world on one side or the other, but you are going to have width, and because of that, you're going to have field balance. And then, okay, getting a guy like Nabuoto behind him and Moreno, I crushed the Moreno signing when they made it. He has been a bargain, what they paid for him. And then you have three center backs. Like, it's just, it's super functional. It's not the most compact thing in the world. You look at them play and you're like, even against Atlanta last night, there were moments where it got a little ragged. Like, they've taken a 4-0 this year down in St. Louis, you know, and like, that's not, that doesn't typically happen to a Shield winner. So like, there's still stuff that you can do, but everything is just so functional and makes so much sense. And they're not trying to be something that they're not as a team. They understand that Lucho is the straw that stirs the drink, and it's built around that, and he has been worth it.
It's not often that they build, and because I mean, you just mentioned how many guys they brought in to build this team really around Lucho. I mean, how often do you sign that many players, you bring in that many guys, and really not miss on any?
Pretty much all hits.
Pretty much all hits. You know,
Alec Khan would be the largest miss, and who cares?
And he only lost his job because
the GA guy you drafted.
He got Wally pipped. Yeah. He got injured, and Salentano's been so good that you can't take him out.
Yeah. Without a doubt. I would say the other thing, credit to Pat Noonan, which is we have seen MLS specific. We have seen coaches had success during the year on something they moved to because they had to, and then spend the whole offseason trying to go back to what they think they think, which is like, this is my core. This is who I am. I mean, we saw it this offseason of like multiple teams, Austin maybe one of them, of like, oh, it worked on the fly last year. Rather than go out and solidify the pieces that fit in this, we're going to go back to my true core, my true fundamentals. Pat Noonan hasn't done that.
Yeah.
Like, I think the assumption was he was going to play the diamond or play whatever Philly plays and try and play the exact same way, and he hasn't gone back to that. And
Chris Albright said on that broadcast, I think against the Fire, when he was first hired, he was like, yeah, we want to play a 4-4-2 diamond, just like Philadelphia. And like,
wow, I forgot about that. Yeah,
I forgot about it too. But Anders has been in my ear talking over the past minute.
There you go, Anders. Credit to you. Credit to Anders for putting us in the position to succeed and then not forcing us back into whatever form he wanted us to be in. So massive moment for Cincy. They clinch a playoff spot in August. They're now going to play about 2 months a regular season soccer in which they have already qualified for the playoffs. So the first team in, Doyle mentioned they should win Supporters Shield. Supporters Shield alone, worth it. You get a trophy, you're the best team. But there are different Supporters Shields. There are record setters, and then there are, you were the best team. There's 2016 Dallas, and then there's 2019 LAFC.
I mean, you're the 2016 Dallas and 2017 Toronto FC, right? Yeah. Like that Dallas team was a lot of fun. They were very good. They won the Shield on like 60 points.
Yes.
And then the next year, Toronto set what was then the record on 68 points in 2017. And then 2018, we had the best ever Supporter Shield race.
Was it not 69 points?
No. 2018 was 69 points.
Okay.
Because it was the Red Bulls in Atlanta going hammer and tongs for that Supporter Shield. And that was the first one I really thought where everybody was going all out to win the Shield. And those two great teams kept pushing each other. And since then, the Red Bulls set the record that year. And that stood for exactly 1 year, because then LAFC set the record in 2019. And that is, to me, that is still the best MLS team I have ever seen. And I know they lost in MLS playoffs. So then, you know, they didn't do the double. So therefore, they won't be codified as that. But going by the underlying data, as well as the eye test, that's the best team I've ever seen in MLS. The underlying data does not like this Cincy team quite that much. However, let me just say, our friends at American Soccer Analysis, they have an expected points model based upon the balance of games. Expected goals works into it, but also like expected threat, which is where on the field the game is being played, what types of passes are being hit, what types of runs are being made. Cincy rate very well. They rate as a completely worthy Shield winner, but they're much more like the 2021 Revs, which is a team that they are chasing that currently holds the record for most single season points, 73.
Yes.
73 points.
To be clear, Toronto was 69.
Yeah. Okay.
Red Bulls was 71.
Okay.
Next year.
All right. Well, there you go. I messed it up. So that Revs team was built around a great goalkeeper, a solid functional defense, a genius number 10, and two forwards. And I think that's what this Cincy team is more like. They're not the overwhelming pitch control, ball control, and, you know, off the chart season like that 2019 LAFC team had, you know, running through Carlos Vela, but still a worthy Shield winner. And like if they set the record, it's not a mistake.
Yeah.
You know, being able to win one goal games because you have a match winner in goal and you have, you know, the MVP number 10, that is a blueprint that has worked in MLS for 28 seasons.
So as you said, they are in that context of the five or six best regular seasons in MLS history. They are on 2.14 points right now at 57 points to 26 games played. That would, if you do the math, put them at 74.5 points. So somewhere between 74 and 75, which would be the record, which would put them one above the Revs.
You mentioned that the advanced stats don't love Cincinnati, even though they're doing the thing on the field. But, and obviously we'll have a lot of time to kind of analyze, you know, what type of team this is for the playoffs. Is this a team, though, that's more built for regular season and then in playoffs, some of those issues that we talk about could pop up? I mean, I know we're just kind of trying to guess here, but would you see that being kind of an issue that they maybe could run into just because of, you know, kind of the underlying stats and what we see?
It's almost the reverse.
Okay.
It's almost like this Cincy team is better built for the playoffs because with their three center backs and, you know, two very good defensive midfielders, they can absorb, and then they have multiple match winners in the attack. Like, that's the type of, if you had said, yeah, this team 59 points but they win MLS Cup, if you told me that before the season, I would say, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. If you had said 74 points but they go out in the first round or second round, I would say, no, I don't think either of those things. So they look to me more like a playoff team. The one thing that gives me pause about that is pitch control. I think you need to be able to dominate Central. If you think about the way, we'll go back to 2019 again, the way the Sounders took apart that LAFC team, they did not let LAFC have central midfield. They didn't try to win it themselves, but they were like, no, this is going to, we're playing you to a stalemate here, and we know you're going to try to keep coming through here. So whenever you turn the ball over here, we're going to get at you. I'm not sure that Cincy are able to be that compact in that part of the field. They were last year. Down the stretch last year, they were that type of team. It's how they almost knocked Philadelphia out. It's how they went to the Red Bulls.
Yeah, that's how they beat the Red Bulls.
I haven't seen that as much from them this year, and it's a little bit weird if there's one worry to have with this team. Well, there are two worries to have with this team. That and the other one is that the East is a meat grinder. There's legit seven teams in the East that nobody's going to want to face in the playoffs.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be fascinating. We are obviously going to follow every single week as FC Cincinnati is in a race for history. Once again, right now, they are on pace to break the all-time points record. This is a club that I believe if they win this weekend, this season would tie their total for points in all the years combined.
No, those the first three years.
Yeah. That was an Andrew Wiebe tweet. So you're welcome, Wiebe, for getting that on here. And I didn't screenshot your tweet because I know that's the only way you like to do it. But I still said it on the show. So FC Cincinnati, congratulations to their fans. Congratulations to the team, to the players. Lucho, yeah. This is not the first time he has carried them through a game this season. He's been fun to watch. He's been awesome. So enjoy it for Cincy fans.
MVP, right?
Oh, yeah. I think he's miles ahead of everyone else. I think last night when we were here trying to talk about that game and hyping it up in the pregames, it's all about Almada versus Acosta. Obviously,
Thiago Almada's an MVP candidate. Yeah. Now we got to make him an MVP candidate. False. Lucho, false. Lucho
just tells him, nope, this is my award.
It's basically as long as they hold on for the shield, it's got to be his award.
Yeah,
I'm there too.
Yeah. Most important player on the best team. I mean, it's without a doubt.
Yep.
Let's go to yours. What's the best thing you saw?
How insane has the LA Galaxy season been? Just from the injuries, Chicharito, from the fans protesting earlier in the year to now, out of nowhere, winning a ton of games and being just 5 points out of the playoff race. They win a big matchup against the Cali Classico against San Jose. A wild game too, right? They go up, then they go down. They are able to win it at the end with a Jovalich PK. Ricky Puig does his thing. I'm just completely shocked to see a team, obviously they get some signings come in, Cirillo, Yoshida, and they've really been able to turn it around. They had the transfer ban as well. They were having to bring guys in from MLS until Yoshida comes in. It's pretty insane that they've been able to turn it around that much. And I think it's pretty impressive just from where they were to where they are now, where they look like a competent, solid team that can absolutely fight for a playoff spot.
Yeah, it was a big win for them. They have now won four of their last five in MLS. They've won both their games since the League's Cup because they had the one game.
Right. Only one loss in 10.
Fagunde is actually getting on the field. No jersey snafus this time. So he's able to make his debut. Now, we do have to kind of check it out because in that game midweek, you know, Puig comes off in the 80th, Douglas Costa. Did you guys hear Vanny's quotes after that game about Costa?
Popped his own shoulder back in.
Back in, and then we'll see how it is for the Saturday. Yeah. That's kind of crazy. But even Costa is a perfect example, I feel like, from what we've seen to this team, where early in the season, it's like, what are you doing? I mean, who is this player?
That's like not potentially the worst contract in MLS.
And then all of a sudden decided one day to play after.
Contract push Costa.
You know how that goes, but he finally starts producing and being the player that I think LA thought they were getting at the beginning of this beginning of him coming to this team. But I, you know, like we said, in MLS, no, you know, it really takes a lot for anybody to be fully dead, and the Galaxy have just kind of rose from the dead right now, and we're seeing it happen.
Costa's got 7 assists in 700 minutes, so it's basically an assist per game. I believe that's in 9 starts. But like you said, he went out now. Tyler Boyd scored in back-to-back games, so that's an option on the wing. Diego Fagundes, as you mentioned, made his debut, so they could cover for Costa if they had to. Jovalich hadn't scored in, I believe it was months.
Yeah.
He got the penalty.
Killing my golden boot dream.
Yeah. Oh, is he on your team?
Yeah. I have him and Chicharito.
Not only does he score, but it feels somewhat, I don't know, strong, whatever you want to say, that Ricky Puig
is a good vibes moment.
Him take the penalty, yeah.
Like your best player, and Ricky Puig is their best player and still one of my, like, one of my favorite players in the league to watch. Letting, and not that Ricky has been money from the spot, I think he's missed a couple, but letting Jovalich,
not as many as Chicharito, but he has missed.
Letting Jovalich take it in such a huge moment, that is the type of thing that makes you believe that, okay, it's still highly improbable that the Galaxy can pull this off, but they play 6 games in September, 4 of them are at home.
Yeah.
And is anybody in the Western Conference playing better soccer right now? Maybe the Dynamo, who they host.
Yeah.
But like, it's not a long list.
And none of those teams are in the playoff race.
Right.
Like the teams they need to knock out. Well, so the Galaxy are in 13th right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fair if you're at home saying, why are we even wasting our time with this conversation? They have played the least amount of games in the league. They've only played 24 games. As Doyle said, they have a lot to make up. So they have 2 games in hand on 10th, 11th, and 12th, who are Austin, SKC, and Portland. They have a game in hand on Dallas in 9th. They are 4 points behind Dallas to be in the playoffs.
So not only do they win that game in hand,
they would be 1 point behind, and they face each other on decision day in LA.
So they're actually 5 points behind. Yeah. So they'd end up being
2
behind. Yes. If they would, but like, you still get like 2 more good weeks and the Galaxy are there.
Yeah.
Which is, from where this season started, is just, it's kind of insane.
I mean,
just from everything that went wrong, anything that could have gone wrong with this Galaxy team did go wrong.
Yeah.
And for the fact that they're even here, that's why for me it was the best thing to watch, just because, like, who is this team? And now they're an extremely fun team to watch. It's not just about results. They're fun to watch. Ricky's doing this thing. And, you know, I that's why I was so shocked about it. Like, whoa, man, this is fun. This is the Galaxy again.
And honestly, this weekend's game against Houston,
huge,
should be awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Because these are two teams that love to use the ball, and I can't believe we're saying this about Houston. But like, they, like,
Dynamo,
you know, Houston fans and DC fans were in my mentions last night saying, like, what happened with Ben Olsen? Why, how is Ben Olsen's team playing such great, entertaining soccer? And it's like, I think Ben Olsen has always primarily been a pragmatist as a coach, like coaching towards what his talent is best at. And when your number 8s are Ace Ace and Coco Carrasquilla, what your team is going to be best at is using the ball through midfield. And oh, by the way, they have a hyper mobile front line now with Corey Barrett and Aliyu and Bassi and Franco. And, you know, they have a lot of options there. So using, like, getting on the ball, giving these guys options. And I don't think it's all super scripted, right? Like, this is not Pep Guardiola positional play. This is something more figure it out in the moment, because we have that kind of talent in midfield. Galaxy are kind of doing the same thing. Like, this could end up, I'm probably jinxing you, it's probably a scoreless draw.
Yeah, right.
But like, this feels like it could be like a highly entertaining 4-3
game. I mean, it's 13 goals in their last four games in all comps for Houston. For Houston? Like, that's insane. I mean, yeah, we could credit all we want. Ache Ache, Kariskia. It's all about Corey Baird. It's all about Corey Baird.
Crab man.
He didn't do it last night after his goal.
Because he heard Weeby slam it and bury it on the show. And he was like, cool, that was a cool thing I used to do. Now I have to find anymore. A new cool thing for them to ruin in this one. As you guys said, that game's going to be fun this weekend. I was going to say Houston was the best thing I saw. So thank you guys for carrying that. But I will add to it, on top of the success they've had, the Open Cup final, the run they're on in the league, Ache Ache was called back into the Mexican national team for the upcoming September window by Jaime Lozano, who is now the permanent full-time manager. So this means quite a lot. They're going to play Australia and Uzbekistan here in the U.S. As part of that window. And when you look at the roster, it is not like, oh, here are a bunch of famous names and we're still trying to figure out what the team is. It is a young group that is what it feels like Lozano's building for the future, for the next Copa America, probably next year for the World Cup. Memo Ochoa is on this list. Ache Ache, Raul Jimenez. They are the only three players over the age of 30. So this is not like a laundry list of former legends. Let's sell tickets. This is, he's playing well and he could legitimately be a central part of what we're building. And I think for Houston, I mean,
he's a best 11 shout this year, right?
I voted him player of the month just now.
I had him second.
Yeah.
I had him second behind Lucho.
I forgot about Lucho. No, I didn't. I put Lucho third. I put Ryan Gauld, Ache Ache, and Lucho on my list.
Those were actually my three as well.
Let's go.
Ryan Gauld, baby. You had to give that.
You had to get the Gauld in. But for the Houston Dynamo, he is now everything they were hoping for when they signed him on the field. And now you start to add off the field, which is, can you have an Eltree starting international who is a big name in that market to try and fill the stadium? He has complained at times. He said, I think it was after the Tigres Monterrey game where he said, why is this building not filled like this for me and for us? Going and playing well for Mexico and continuing to be a part of that, that's how you get that done.
Yeah, absolutely. In that market, you know, you obviously have a ton of soccer fans in that market, predominantly Mexican fans. For fans that aren't paying as much attention to the Dynamo, getting Ache Ache onto that Mexico team where a lot of those fans will be watching Mexico, oh, look, Ache Ache, he's plays for us. Let's start. I mean, I would hope so, right? Yeah. I lived in Houston for 6 years, so I'm, you know, I root for them as much as I can. I want to see that building be full. I went to a lot of games where I was, you know, not a whole lot of people there. So I think that it's good. It's positive to see Ache Ache playing to the level where Mexico calls him in, because I think it's going to benefit not only the Mexican national team, but the Dynamo as well, just with getting that fan support. Look, this is a fun team to watch now. There's nothing, we can't say anything else about it. So let's, you know, hopefully that works out.
And I will add that as someone who used to play cornet in the supporter section, the Houston band.
Yeah, they are.
Great. They are so good.
So good.
So good.
I love that you said that because you know I get your instrument wrong all the time.
What did I play, David?
I always say trombone, I think. No. I think I brought that
they have this. Times. They had this, I'll never forget, they had like, what, you know, when I was living there, they had this big sign that they would say, that they would put up, and they would say, somos pocos, pero somos ruidosos, which means we're not a whole lot of us, but we're loud. And it's true. They're loud. It was always a party. Even if it might have been, you know, 40 guys at one point. Now it's gotten a lot more, but it's always, they do have some passionate fans. I love it. And I love that they're doing well and hopefully get them out there to watch this team.
Fourth in the Western Conference. They are going to Miami for the U.S. Open Cup final against, I don't know if you've heard, Lionel Messi and Inter Miami. It's everything you'd want from year one of Ben Olsen.
Yep.
It's everything Pat Onstad and his staff needed, which is like a little bit of respite to now work, which is the pressure's off because you've had success. Now you can sort of confidently build from here. There's a lot of building blocks in this. We hope Coco Carrasquilla continues to be one of them. Unsure, but
our good friend Tom Bogert says that there have strangely been no actual offers from Europe. So he and it seems like the Dynamo expect Coco to finish the year as a Houston Dynamo player. What happens come January? I would be surprised if he's not sold in January.
Which works for you because you've had your season. Right, you can then replace him properly with time off, which is what you want to do.
He's so good. He's so good at that midfield. Amazing. I mean, you talk about Ache Ache, but Coco is at another level. Yeah.
And we're about to talk about some more national team call-ups, but I think for the Dynamo, if you can go to potential prospective players and say, Look at what Ace Ace did to get back in the national team with us. Look at what Coco did to get this offer to potentially La Liga or whatever. Like, you've now reestablished yourself as a potential jumping off point for good players who want to come in. And I don't think the Houston Dynamo could have said that about themselves over the last few years. So Ace Ace is back into the Mexican national team. Argentina called up three MLS players, four if you include Stefano, coming into the team. I assume you already know this, but Lionel Messi's on the Argentine national team. Thiago Almada, who was in the World Cup, continues. And then Alan Velasco is the third one added to this group. FC Dallas designated player. It's been an up and down MLS career for him, but we're talking about the World Cup champions. Like, this is just... Again, Dallas.
And these aren't friendly.
They're World Cup qualifiers. Yep. Splashes this one on the website. Immediate emails like, this is huge for Dallas. And this is just, I think, something a lot of us never really thought we'd see.
Yeah, I mean, especially not now. I would think that maybe he has the talent to be in that team and play some sort of role. I don't know how many minutes he would actually get or how he will get. But I think it's only positive for Velasco to get in there, to get into that team, get into that training camp and be there with these guys and these players and the champions. Now, what I would like to see, you know, could Velasco be the Thiago Almada of that World Cup squad where he's not going to get a ton of time, but he's kind of building in and maybe an opportunity for Thiago to kind of start showing himself a little bit? Because as we know, he played, you know, very limited minutes in the World Cup. But obviously that was very positive for him because we've seen how he's played this year and, you know, just the type of player he is. But I think it's going to benefit. I think FC Dallas will see the difference in Velasco where if he gets called up now, he gets maybe called up again next month. If he can stay healthy and keep playing, I think you're going to start seeing kind of the benefits of him being around those type of players.
My theory is they would see more benefits if they played him as a number 10.
Yes.
Yeah.
They have the last three games.
He played more. It was back to a single pivot is more of a...
midweek.
Yeah.
But against Austin, he did kind of play.
Yes, he was the 10.
For a little. I mean, I don't know about the whole game.
Have Jesus Ferrer for that game, which was part of it.
He was more to the left side and as kind of like a free eight. And like, look, he can execute that scheme that Nico Estevez asks for, which is all about pitch control. I think he's better in given a free role like what we saw against Miami, where he was able to just find the game and create and put guys into transition and put guys into spots to make plays. And that, I mean, that was the single best game. Like, that game got him this call.
Yep.
He was amazing.
So, and that's the other part about this, which is like, it's great to have Argentine international players in MLS. They are the World Cup champions, but it's his play in MLS earned him a spot on this team. And that's where I think you look at over the last 10 years, some great players in Major League Soccer. Some great players in Major League Soccer representing some of the best national teams. There's that top. We talked about all World Cup. 14 teams, 10 teams in the world.
It's really
in reality.
It's about 10.
And there hasn't really been a guy plays in MLS and plays for those teams.
Yeah.
Messi will shift that because Messi's Messi and you signed him as that. But to start having guys break into those teams because of the way they play in MLS, that would be a turning point.
It's a landmark moment.
Yeah.
It actually is a landmark moment for the league. And let's hope that Almada and Velasco go. Where are they playing? Bolivia?
It's Bolivia. It's at home, against Ecuador, and then against Bolivia in La Paz, if you don't know,
maybe the idea is to bring the 20-year-old kid and
make him run,
empty the tank for 60 minutes in La Paz, and then
So Ecuador at home, and then at Bolivia.
So let's hope these guys cover themselves in glory, do very well, because that's good for them, obviously, but it's great for the league.
Yeah, Velasco. Do you remember Velasco gets Messi's jersey after that game in Leagues Cup? I wonder if Scaloni saw that and was like, "Hey, Leo, what's up? What's up with this?"
Velasco wrote his phone number in it for Messi and was like, "Just tell your boys to call me. We'll see what happens." Congratulations to all the other players called up. A ton of players across Major League Soccer. You can go to MLSsoccer.com. Each team's announcing them. I mean, half of Finland, half of Paraguay. Congrats to Carlos Cornell. He just got his first call up to his mother's native Paraguay.
That's very good. It's very underappreciated goalkeeper.
Super underappreciated.
And could be the starter for that national team. He's only 26. He's been a locked-in starter. Yep. He's been one of the top five in MLS since he's become a starter here. So those are all of the other national teams outside of CONCACAF. Of course, the U.S., a big one as well. Not an MLS-heavy roster because of MLS heading into the playoff time. But the U.S. will play Uzbekistan and Oman in this window. I don't want to spend a ton of time on this now because we'll do it more as the games come along. Just give me like one big thought.
The big thought is that there's just not much to complain about. The U.S. is at a point in terms of the amount of talent that we have. It's deeper and with younger talent than we've ever had before. And it makes it fun, but it takes some of the drama and the angst out of these call-ups, as does the fact that we're already qualified for 2026. But looking at it, if I had to pick at one scab, I don't think Johnny Cardozo has been good at all in his... He's gotten like 7 or 8 camps at this point. Meanwhile, Tanner Tessman is out there captaining Venezia and
scored a banger
of a free kick, doing everything that you would want from a game controlling number six. Granted, it's Serie B, but they're probably in line for
that's promotion. Where Christopher Lund plays, left back at Palermo.
The so left
Serie
back
B that, is on the radar.
That's a professional segue, right?
Yeah, thank you.
A Danish American who has apparently already filed his switch.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. So he is officially a one-time switch. So yes. He is officially U.S. national team
21-year-old
for life. I have a Danish friend who is pretty disappointed by that.
Congratulations, Doyle. Yes. That's always a nice little
brag. Some of my best friends are Danish.
They're very expensive friends, I would assume.
there's not a lot to complain about. I'm looking forward to these games, but I'm not like pulling my hair out about it.
That would be tough. Anything for you before we move on?
Drake Callender. I think it's awesome to see him in. He's been
Go Cal Bears.
Incredible. I mean, bar Messi, he's been the most important player for Inter Miami because he's kept them in games where, they probably should have conceded a bit more. So I'm really happy to see him in there. Benja Kramaski, as we know, he's also eligible for Argentina. He gets his first call up to try to kind of bring him into the fold. He's been great. And you're seeing the Messi effect even reach the U.S. national team. I will say that I have one complaint.
Okay.
Ooh.
Why isn't Lucho Acosta on this team?
Is he not?
I don't think he's allowed to.
Eligible yet?
Yeah.
I'm just beating that drum because I would love to see it.
Sure.
It'd be so fun.
It's very USMNT fan of you to demand a thing that can't happen and then be like, Berhalter,
spending a lot of time.
Am I right, Triple G?
Like, honest to God, if we could get Lucho eligible in time for Copa America.
Man, yeah. So
it's just so fun.
My understanding and Anders in my ear, thank God we stopped talking about LAFC 2019 so I could listen to the rest of the show. His Anders was jumping through the roof. But he is still working on his process, so he cannot be a part of it. Congrats to Kramaski, as you said, who got called in. He's been a part of Argentine's U20 camps in the past, U.S. youth national team camps as well. So the U.S. and Argentina traded Velasco for Kramaski, and that's just all it is. Yeah. Let's start digging into this weekend, because as I said, we've got a big weekend coming up. We've got our MLS squad picks here. You can join our league. This is Extra Time's league, so you can go to MLSSquadPick.com to play, or you can click out the link that Will tweet from the Extra Time account to join the official Extra Time league. Use code EXTRA. That's all caps. EXTRA. You pick 5 players for your squad. If they all score in the same match day, you win. You can win a free jersey, $160 gift card to MLS store if all your players score. And then each round you play gives you one entry for the $10,000 grand prize at the end of the season. We have done this before where we collectively pick a team. I don't think we've ever won. I don't think all 5 of our players have ever scored. I don't think it's going to happen this week based off some of the names you guys gave me. But now we have a league for you to watch us fail, and you can succeed over us, and you can lord it over us. And we absolutely would love to engage with you while you do that as well. So feel free to screenshot, tweet at us at Kalen Carr 2Rs or CA2.
Let me figure it out so that.
So you can get it right.
That
you can get that tweet in. I'm going to start us off. My first pick was Chicho Arango. It's a Rocky Mountain Cup.
It's just at Kalen Carr. No spaces.
Okay.
No numbers or anything. C-A-L-E-N-C-A-R-R. He loves to hear from people on Twitter.
So tweet him your team. Chicho Arango, Rocky Mountain Cup. The Rapids gave up in the Minnesota game. I don't like to say that very often. It was clear. The way, especially Pukki gets in on the last goal, it's a great goal. It's a great run from Tajiri Shradi to set him up. every head drops from the Rapids before the ball's in the back of the net. Now you go into a rivalry game. RSL's at home. They need a bounce back. Arango will start after coming off the bench midweek. He's been dangerous when he gets chances. There are chances out there against the Rapids. So I'm going with that, with Chicho Arango to start. Also a reminder, you can watch Rocky Mountain Cup this weekend. That's the first pick. Did you? Who crab-manned this? That was you? You have the second pick.
I was going to say, like, it's not... probably not a smart pick, just because at some point,
all,
like,
four of us are going to score except Corey Barrett.
Yeah, 100%. It's going to be me. It's going to be my fault.
No, there's zero chance any of these players score.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I'll say there's one guy on the list that might score. But like I said, it probably isn't the smartest pick just because this scoring run has to end at some point for Corey Barrett. But I mean, he's playing the nine and just doing the thing for Houston, and he's getting opportunities and he's putting them away.
And they're playing an LA team that's not exactly a lockdown defensive.
Gave up two goals to the San Jose team that struggles even in a win.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, I think it's fair to say Houston will score. Corey Baird most likely to do it. So Corey Baird, our second pick. They play at the Galaxy, as you mentioned, two hottest teams in the West. Who was your pick?
I went with Sam Surridge. He didn't play midweek, and I thought that was because he was being rested. Turns out he has kind of a knock and may not be able to play on Sunday, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Gary Smith finds 45 minutes for the young man who in Nashville are playing Charlotte at home. And Charlotte have been decent of late, but they're still weak defensively. They give up a lot of chances and they can be manhandled in the box. And Surridge is just classic English center forward. So I think he will figure out a way to put the ball in the back of the net.
Based off the rules of the game, you're also allowed to change your team up until kickoff of that player. So right. If Sam Surridge didn't start, you could jump in and say, oh, before the first game of the match day. That's what Anders just told me. So that's not super helpful.
Yeah, because it's 3:30 p.m. on Saturday. NYCFC host Vancouver. I almost picked Brian White.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a bad shout.
Brian White, he's in form, man. And
he is in form, but here's the thing. It's another road game. Yeah. It's on short rest. Vancouver have already won two in a row on the road. NYCFC played really well. They're playing desperate. I would stay away from Vancouver selections, even though you love Ryan Gauld.
No, of course, yeah. Well, I just pick Ali Ahmed and I pick him every single week until he scores a goal. You know, classic MLS Next Pro wingback who turns into a starting MLS center mid, because that's how Vancouver does it. Nothing they do makes sense, but it's fun and it's been good to watch. The final two picks are collective, so we all get blame if these two players don't score, both for our team as well as for everyone watching, because everyone's going to be mad at us. The first is Denny Bouanga. The second is Lionel Messi, because on Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern time, Inter Miami travel to LA to face off against LAFC, last year's MLS Cup winners, this year's Leagues Cup winner. Such an easy way to sell it. I didn't even have to pretend that we should be excited about this one, because it's champions against champions. It's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. Let's start with Miami coming into this one, because we haven't mentioned it yet. Yep. Shut out against Nashville. Didn't get the victory. 0-0 draw midweek. First time, though, we've seen them shut out since Messi arrived. What should we make of what we saw?
I do think that Nashville has figured out a little bit of a blooper in how to play them, even though I think they were better in the League's Cup final. Yep. Against them, and how they played. This was a lot more open, and they are a bit fortunate that Leo didn't put one away. The free kick, that opportunity at the end of the game, Panico was really a big part of that for Nashville and keeping them with that clean sheet. Look, there are issues with this Miami team. We know that already. And I think that defensively, even though they were also able to keep a shutout against Nashville, going to LA is a lot different than staying at home and playing Nashville. Defensively, there are some holes in that back line for Miami. And, you know, I'm a little nervous for them as far as going to LA, a team that's obviously desperate for some wins now after a loss against Charlotte. It could be a struggle for them defensively. I think that's kind of what we have to look at with this team. They're going to eventually get goals. They're not going to be shut out a whole lot. But I think defensively is where we kind of have to look at Miami and say, okay, they kind of got to shirt things up, especially against a team like LA.
I mean, think about the emergency defense that Kamal Miller in particular had to play in that game last night for Miami. He was fantastic, and not to say that he can't repeat that, but you don't want to put your center backs in a position where they have to make that play multiple times against Denny Bouanga, Carlos Vela, the new guy Mario Gonzalez was very good getting into open field. And LAFC will have no compunctions about sitting back and absorbing in the way that Nashville did.
Right.
They will be a slightly different shape, but they will use roughly that same game plan against Miami, who I think the onus will be on them to carry play and be on the front foot and be the protagonist. So this one, it doesn't set up particularly well for Miami, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Especially when you factor in the short rest and the cross-country flight.
Of course. And the fact that LAFC didn't have the midweek game.
Yeah.
They're rested and they're home. So, yeah, definitely.
And they're probably pissed off.
Right.
They've only won twice in their last 8 games in MLS. Yeah. And I don't think they're as good a team as they were last year. But they're still really good. Yeah. And they can still blow you up and put 4 on you if you are not... If you're leggy, if you're not clean on the ball... LAFC will hammer you. So
the two wins were both at home, 4-0 Colorado, 3-0 St. Louis.
There you go.
Right. And the St. Louis one, I think, was to your point of like, if you don't come in at 100%, we'll blow you off the field before you settle in, and we don't mind what the game looks like.
Yeah.
Which is a change for LAFC for positive and negative. I think that's why we felt comfortable about Denny Bulanga of like, if it's Yedlin and he's getting forward, now you've got a lot of Kristov 1v1 against... against Bulanga in the open field.
Not good.
And it feels like Gonzalez is going to play the, you can play into my feet and I can launch you, or I'll try and drag a center back so that you have as much 1v1 opportunity. At a minimum, whether he's going to finish at a high level, we don't know yet. He scored against Charlotte, which was a good start for him, and really like the only big chance he got. So this is a big one. It's going to be fun. Miami sort of doesn't have a lot of points to drop. So going at LAFC after midweek, that's not considered points you should get, but they drop points against Nashville. There are not a lot of spaces for them in all of this. So that game's going to be 10 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday night, the only game at that time. So everyone can lock in, watch it, of course, on Apple TV, on MLS Season Pass. It's going to be a lot of fun. One news note before we move out of this one, Tom Bogert reporting. So lock it in, because you know it's a fact then, that Mamadou Fall has agreed a deal to go from LAFC to Barcelona. It will be a loan with a purchase option. And what Tom reported is the purchase option could go up to as much as $7 million if everything hits and the way it goes. There's a guy who was playing prep school soccer 3.5 years ago, USL 3 years ago, and then broke into MLS with LAFC, spent a large part of last year on loan at Villarreal.
The first half of last year being awesome.
In MLS. Mainly with Villarreal, second team. Now, I just think alone having a player go from MLS to Barcelona in any way is cool. Obviously, Julian Araujo, a part of that as well. And then you just talk about sort of out of nowhere where Mamadou Fall developed and now what it means for LAFC.
I mean, having your players on the radar at all of Barcelona, that's a big deal. Not only in terms of what you could make of that financially, but in terms of the players that you can recruit next. Not that LAFC have had troubles with that. If you look at the guys that they've brought in the past few transfer windows, they're able to get a class of player, not just older guys, but like younger players that I think MLS teams would not have been able to reach in years past. And part of it is like, look, the biggest clubs in the world are watching us. We win trophies. We play good soccer. If you play well, you will play no matter your age. Mamadou Fall checked all of those boxes. And just personally, I've written a million times over the past year and a half that he is the best young center back I've ever seen in MLS. So it's nice to get that validation that one of the biggest teams in the world is.
And you got a DM from a guy named Chavi who was like,
yeah,
angry.
He's like, hey, hold on a second.
Matt Miazga. Who else is on that list?
Anders is saying Jackson Reagan. No, it's not.
You can't have your master's PhD by the time you're considered a young player.
Right.
It has to come before undergrad.
But what Mamadou Fall was doing last year in particular, the first half of last year, he was dominating games as a center back from open play and on restarts. And obviously, he's not Giorgio Chiellini as of yet, right? He's probably never going to hit that level, but I thought he reads the game so well, and then you add his physical gifts on top of that. If it wasn't Barcelona, it was going to be some other Champions League team that was going to say, yeah, we're going to hit the number, we're going to bring him here.
And we come out of a day in which we talked about Velasco playing his way into the Argentine national team via MLS play. And then you put Mamadou Fall playing his way onto the radar for Barcelona via MLS play. This is sort of the change of the league, and it's happening on both ends of like a Messi coming, a Vela coming, but also, of course, these young players being able to produce and show themselves on this platform. Let's move to the, I think, the biggest match of the weekend, which is SKC hosting St. Louis for the first time. It was a 4-0 loss last time for Sporting Kansas City in this matchup. It's been a lot different since then for SKC. Not perfect, still outside the playoff line, but I think going into the first matchup, they'd only won two games over the course of the first 11 games of the season, or whatever it is. And then they didn't show up for that rivalry game, losing 4-0. What do you make of SKC now going into this one?
Better team. Right, they're a much better team than they were. They're better at using, but it's almost like what we were saying with LAFC, right? Where it's like, if you are not clean with the ball against Sporting against St. Louis City, they're going to go the other way and they're going to put four on you. And that's what happened in that game. Sporting KC tried to use the ball, come up field, left space and behind for the counter, and got annihilated. And like, you can't do that. And it was I remember it was disappointing to see Sporting KC like not show up for the first game in what we all assume is going to be a great rivalry.
Yeah, without a doubt. And you know that the Kansas City fans are waiting for this one after that last matchup against St. Louis. That rivalry really starting to kindle so early in kind of, you know, their matchups. It's so crazy with St. Louis. I still don't really understand how they continue to do this. Obviously, they have the personnel for Bradley Carnell to really implement what he wants to do and do well. But also the injuries that
they've won two games this week where it's like they didn't even look like they thought they were going to win.
Right.
It was just like, let's throw out a team. Let's see what we have. They've worked Klaus back in. Which is exciting.
Also, when Joaquini's out as well now. So they get Klaus back, but they, you know, leader in goals is Joaquini now, and he's not there. So it's just interesting to see. I still don't get it. I still don't get how they're doing it, but it's so fun to watch.
It is a lot of what we talked a bit about with Cincinnati and the Revs a few years ago of like, sometimes when you're a top team in MLS, you win games you think you shouldn't.
Right.
And if you win a lot of them, you go up there. But St. Louis, they have a clear identity. That's the other part of this that's fun, which is Peter Vermees has a clear identity in MLS of how the game should be played, how he's built his team, what he wants to do. It is owning the ball. Possession is life. It's oxygen. It's air. It's how they want to play. And then Bradley Carnell is on the other side of that spectrum. So you add in the rivalry between the regions, the people, the city. I say it all the time. I think just blue versus red, it's a clean. You already don't like each other if you're wearing those colors.
Right.
Facing each other, and then you add in the soccer part, which is like there is an extent, and we saw it in New York between NYCFC and Red Bulls, of like both sides, it becomes your identity, and you want to prove that you're right about the way the game should be played, about the way you play it. It's an opportunity head to head. It was clear the first time that St. Louis was right. Question will be this now in the second game. They do play one more time coming up in September, so that'll be the rubber match. Depending on how this goes, if St. Louis walks out with another 4-0 victory, they will have already locked it down in year one.
By the way, speaking of young players who came to MLS, made their name, and then moved on, John Duran just scored his second goal for Aston Villa, Colombian national team as well. Still just 19 years old.
An ETR breaking news moment.
Right?
What a show we have going on today. The final big match of the weekend. Seattle facing off against Portland. The Sounders 2-1 win at Austin midweek. A big one for them as they've struggled. I think we talked about it before the show. Jordan Morris, very impressive at center forward to the point where it might be questionable if it's Rui Diaz's spot guaranteed when he's healthy.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that, you know, I don't think we would have thought, right? With Rui Diaz being the legendary figure that he's been with Seattle, but I don't think you could say that they looked better. They looked better with Jordan Morris playing at the nine. Leo Chu comes in and plays on that left wing. They looked a lot better. Maybe a little fortunate to get the win late with a Jordan Morris goal. But I think you can't look at it and say, wow, that did look better than we've seen from Seattle. Another team, right, that's been just so up and down. And you think they're, you know, you don't, without looking at the table, you're like, that's a really bad season for them.
And they're
they're tied on points with LAFC. I know LAFC has a couple games in hand, but they're right there for a home playoff game. I don't know. I don't know now with obviously fixture congestion, whether you go back to Rui Diaz, but I think you can't just sit back and say that didn't look better than what we've seen from the Sounders recently.
I think Bolodero has 10th assists of the season as well. his contract's up at the end of the year. We've heard stories about Rui Diaz potentially not wanting to be an MLS, or maybe his time with the Sounders are done. All of that becomes questionable, and he becomes somewhat expendable. It's really interesting. On the other side for Portland, they also won 2-1 midweek. It was against RSL at home. Miles Joseph first win as the head coach, and you have talked about it all week. Portland gets up for Seattle games.
Yeah.
Brian Schmetzer said it's no longer a rivalry. That was a big thing we talked about in Gio Savarese leaving, of his legacy. This would set up pretty well of like, Portland always beats Seattle.
You
got to
contextualize that. Brian Schmetzer said it's no longer a rivalry. He wasn't saying no, that
he hates Portland.
Yeah. He still hates Portland. The Seattle fans hate Portland. He recognizes that a rivalry. He was criticizing himself for not getting his team, this great generation of Seattle players who have won MLS Cups and CONCACAF Champions League. They have consistently not gotten up for this game. So that's what Schmetzer meant when he said it's no longer a rivalry.
Oh, no,
he was kind of crapping on his guys.
Yes. Sounds like a little motivation to
his guys. His desktop is a picture of the Timbers winning something just to piss him off every single day.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah. He believes it's a rivalry. He does not believe they've held up their end of the bargain, and they should. They are home, which has actually been worse over the last few years for them against the Portland Timbers, which is wild to say.
I want to go back and I want to change my guaranteed score to Rivalry Diaz. Rivalry Diaz is scoring 2.
Just because we're questioning him. Yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't make it Mamadou Fall after that whole conversation, who was a dangerous goal scorer.
He was.
When he was a starter in MLS.
Insane on
set pieces. So that's it for us today. We just have Argentine internationals getting called up from MLS, MLS teams selling players to Barcelona, Ache back into the national team, and a bunch of rivalry games coming up. So like a simple thing.
And Lucho Acosta, we awarded Cincinnati the shield and Lucho Acosta MVP.
And also maybe, you know, eventually on the U.S. national team.
Yeah.
Do you guys have a golden boot you want to give away?
No, that's still tight, right?
Okay, I just didn't, well, we're officially naming stuff, so I didn't know if you wanted to like throw that in there. Brian White?
No, we're not there yet.
Oh, we're not there yet. All right. Well, that's for next show. We'll be back not next Monday because of Labor Day. So everyone enjoy your holiday and your time off. We will be back next Wednesday with your, of course, weekend recap. Get you ready for the week that's coming. National team game. So we'll dig into a lot of that. We'll probably do about 37 minutes about Finland because Finland is an MLS All-Star team.
Timu Pukki, we'll do about 18. Robert Taylor, Pukki.
Pookie now?
Yeah, I said.
Oh, you said Pookie?
Yeah,
I said. Sorry, I couldn't. Anders was complaining about that they weren't Scandinavian in my ears while you were talking.
We got to end the show.
And with that, thank you all for listening. Thank you to you two for being here. Thank you to Tom, Kaylin, and Weeby for not being here so I can hang out with my two homies. And we'll talk to you all next time.